Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Let's look at verse 1, please. And I want you to notice that verse 1 and verse 2 emphasize something that I try to do all the time, and that is help you to realize that the church is a family. And the way and the connotation that the members are held in verses 1 and 2 emphasizes the fact that there are Christian mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and Christian children that make up the family of God. And I like the way that Paul adds that family emphasis to the different age brackets in the church. Notice what he says. Never reprove an older man, but always appeal to him as a father. Now, the word reprove is a very strong Greek word. It literally means to strike someone with a blow. What it means in the context here is metaphorical. It means do not accost someone with words. And he's talking to Timothy, who is he is a younger man. He's somewhere under 40, probably past 35, between 35 and 40, somewhere around there. Anybody in this culture under 40 was considered to be a young man. Now, the word older man, you may have, what are you having? What does King James have for there? Older person? Older? Elder. Okay. What does New American Standard have, Vern? I forgot. Older? Well, the term is presbyteros, and that's what we got the word elder from. Many translations feel like it should not be elder here, but older man. I personally think it should be elder. I think King James is a better translation. But we're going to be talking about two groups in the church. We're going to be talking about two positions, I believe. One is the elder, mentioned here in verse 1 and 2, and then taken up completely down in verse 17. And the other group is older women that was also official position called the widow's role. So I think it's talking about two staff positions or staff responsibilities in the early church. And therefore, I think the word elder should be instead of older man. Many think because it talks about older women and younger men and young women, it should be a term of age and not of position. But the context must judge that. I think Paul is talking about the older man and simply in getting caught up in the aspect of Timothy's relationship to the elders. He also goes on to talk about the relationship to the widows, who would be the older women, and just throws in the younger group as a balance. Now, never reprove an elder, older man. That goes back to the Old Testament. Age was revered in the Old Testament. Leviticus 19:32 is a beautiful example about an older person. Today, even in the East, age is a sign of respect and honor. And I think it's something to the degradation of American culture that we have come to so youth-oriented that we think anybody past 60, you know, just can't function and surely can't think straight. And it's to our society's devilment, I want to say to you. And I'm really pleased at some of the movements that have been made in the area of older people's rights and equality and getting them to work as long as they want to work. And so I think it's a shame that our culture has treated its older people like it has. For the most part, we are barbarians the way we treat our older people. So it's talking about honoring the older person and always appeal to him as a father. Now, the word appeal is a word that speaks about present tense. It means continue to handle this way. I think it is inappropriate. Age is always a problem in a church, I guess. Especially when there's a younger pastor involved or a younger leader. Not only is there always a problematical tension when there's any kind of confrontation. I am a non-confrontive person. I just don't like to do that. And when it falls my lot to have to do that, it is always a tension situation to me. And add on top of the tension situation that some folks think no one younger than them should ever criticize them. Well, I'm sorry, I am the spiritual leader of this church. I am the pastor. I have to function in that role despite my age, which I have no control over whatsoever. But I need to do it in a proper atmosphere, and those that I must talk to need to respond in a proper atmosphere. For you see, age is not the only spiritual criteria. You can be 100 years old and just be as cantankerous old saint as anybody in the world. And you can be 13 and be cantankerous. So it's age has something to do in people's minds. But very often, not all that much, I think, in the degree of maturity often. Now, it does in many cases. It does not have to. Notice where it talks about treat younger men like brothers, and I like that. I think that if we in the church could ever really catch the picture of the family of God, that we would be an attractive body to the world. We really have not caught this and institutionalized this in a way that we should. We are still a group of aggregates, people, individuals that come together maybe a couple of times a week. We have not fully embodied the concept of the Christian family. No. But the more we can, the more New Testament we will be, and the better will be our fellowship. It talks about older women like mothers and younger women like sisters with perfect purity. And the perfect purity is related grammatically to the younger women. There is always a problem with church leaders and impropriety. We must not only be above reproach, we must be above the possibility of slander. We must not even watch ourselves so strictly. We must flee from every appearance of evil. We must take ourselves out of the realm of possibility. I think one of the things that hurts me the most is when I hear of someone in a prominent position who has allowed impropriety and impurity to mar his relationship with not only his church or his people or, you know, and on and on. Christian leaders, be you deacons or Sunday school teachers or pastors or whatever, watch it. Be careful. Be careful. Be careful. Second, verse 3, we're talking about always care for widows. Now, the Greek word here is honor widows. It's a word that speaks of giving due weight to. The word honor is to treat someone with dignity and respect due them. It's used in the Old Testament, in Exodus chapter 20, of parents. And here it is used of older women in the church. You are to treat the older saints with the respect that's due them. I think a sign of a church that loves Jesus is a sign of a church that will love all the people of its church, especially those who may be somewhat vulnerable and defenseless. The Old Testament over and over again says that God is the protector of the widow and the orphan and the resident alien. A couple of passages, Exodus 22, 22 through 24, Deuteronomy 18, 10, among numerous examples that God takes a special care for the widow and a special care for the orphan and a special care for the outcast and the poor. You start messing with the underprivileged, you just started messing with God. You know that? Best pick on some rich, strong fella and mess with somebody whose God has taken his special protection. Notice where it talks about here who are really dependent. I think Vernon read are really widows. Now, that sounds funny. We're using the word widow in a funny way. We're talking about widows and real widows. Now, that's strange. I thought widows were widows. But Paul is going to make a distinction, not because there's any distinction between widows, but because there is going to be a special group of widows that are going to be employed and supported and ministry functioning in the early church. And so the ones who are really widows are going to be the ones who are on the widow's roll. Okay? Now, notice where it talks about, here's the qualifications for what is a real widow in the early church's opinion. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, now King James has the word nephew there. The Greek word is used in the widest sense of grandchildren. They must first learn to practice piety. Now, some of the early theologians thought that they referred to the widows. But the they is plural, and the widows are singular, and so the they has got to refer to the widow's children. Now, we need to have an emphasis in the church that adults need to take care of their parents. Now, that's not hit very often because we don't like that. But I want to tell you, a godly couple will honor and take care of their parents. And whatever that involves, sometimes it does involve being in a nursing home. But I want to tell you what, if it does involve even that in the later stages, it doesn't involve putting them there and forgetting them. It involves love and respect until the day that they go to be with the Lord. And just mark it up, those people who neglect their parents will probably be the ones who their kids neglect them. There's a saying, it takes... How's it go? Never should have said it. Something about it, a parent can have 10 children, but it shouldn't take 10 children to take care of one parent later on. Just shouldn't do that. And some of the family entanglements amaze me at how sometimes older people are pushed off the stage of life to die in a home forgotten. It should not be so. Should not be so. Now, notice, I don't know how you teach families to do that except just to tell them. And, you know, it seems like that a person would have natural inclinations. That's what Paul is saying here. A little later, just a second. Notice in verse where it says, "For this is acceptable to God. But a woman who is really a widow..." Now, we go back to this "really a widow" simply means the person who's going to function an ecclesiastical office. Here's some qualifications of her. She lives alone. That's a perfect tense in Greek, which means she's been widowed in the past and she remains widowed today. She lives alone by some act in the past and she remains living alone. Has fixed her hope on God, perfect tense, in this time of tragedy and sorrow and need. And you know, I really can't imagine what it must be like. And I just have to admit to you, I cannot imagine the trauma of living and loving somebody for so many years, be it 10 or 20 or 30 or 50. And the way that that one flesh relationship of the Bible links two lives together, I can't imagine what it must be like to lose a wife or a husband. I just can't fathom that. Many of you have experienced. I can't. I can't know the deep hurt and loneliness that's involved in that. But the widow that turns her affection, turns her love, turns her devotion, turns her loneliness, turns her need, turns her hours, and fixes her hope on God is the kind of widow they're talking about here. In the words perfect tense, she did it in the past. She remains committed to the Lord in that time of great need and loneliness. Also, it talks about night and day, devotes herself to prayers and entreaties. These two last two phrases have been perfect tense. This is present tense. Present tense in Greek speaks of continual action. She day by day gives herself to prayer and intercessions for other people on her behalf. And a beautiful example of this is found in Luke chapter 2, verse 37, of Anna, the prophetess at the temple, that took baby Jesus in her arms and prophesied over him. It talks about that she was married for 7 years and her husband died, and the rest of the time she dedicated herself to God in the temple. And so there is one example of a lady that did this kind of thing. Notice in verse 6 where it says, "While the widow her gives herself..." Now mine has "up to luxury." Vernon's had in New American Standard "wanton pleasure." Well, the Greek word is wanton or pleasure. It can be either one. It seems to be the concept of the merry widower. The person who, now that all the binds, the connections with a home have been touched, that makes all the night spots and really lives it up. And the context here in the Greek culture was and I'm sorry, ladies, a single woman had absolutely zero potential for work. Zero. No work except prostitution. That was all that was available. And so it might have been the kind of thing that Paul was talking about, the problems in ancient Ephesus where there was the worship of Aphrodite, Diana, involved in the prostitution there. And it may be that kind of thing. We really don't know for sure. It just says that when a widow who gives herself up to that kind of living is really dead, though alive. And the word "dead" is perfect tense. She's died in the past when it starts. She remains dead in the present. And though she walks around alive, she's really dead, present tense. Well, we've used that same concept many times in the spiritual realm. There are many folks that walk around who are physically alive and spiritually dead. Now, is this talking about falling from grace? I don't know. I am so committed to once saved, always saved, and the perseverance of the saints that I have great problems in letting a text refer to someone who was truly a Christian falling away. It may speak not about spiritual death, but about real joy and life and a witness for the church in that. I don't know. I just don't know. Now, notice where it speaks of her as... it goes to the next one, verse 7. "Continue to give these directions." The words "commands" there for Timmy is an apostolic representative. "So that the people may be without reproach." Now, the word "people" in my translation is the Greek word "they." Who does the "they" refer to? Well, to me, it's got to refer to the widows who are going to be on this special roll. Now, notice, the elders, or let's make it the pastors, have to be above reproach. The deacon has to be above reproach. And now the same exact phrase is used of the widows on roll, that they must be above reproach. So this speaks to me that we're speaking of another functionary office in the early church. And it's very important that there's no handles for criticism on the people who take the leadership responsibility in God's church. Now, notice where it says, verse 8, whoever failed to provide for his own relatives, and especially those of his own immediate family, has disowned the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. How so? Well, verse 8 is the negative statement of the positive statement made up in verse 4. I don't know how you're going to use this. I remember when I was in Marshall, I had a guy come to my house one night to sell me life insurance. And when I didn't want to buy it, he quoted this verse to me, and I just about punched him out. No, this verse does not refer to life insurance, dadgum. Golly, I still get mad. You know, the audacity of somebody saying I'm not worse than an unbeliever because I didn't buy his policy. Yeah. Well, he said, can I pray with you? I said, no, I don't want to pray with you. And even, anyway, I think this is talking about if someone who does not know our Christ lives in a loving relationship with his own family and helps them, what must the world think when someone who claims to know the Lord of heaven with all the graciousness and love that God provides and won't even care for his own family? Well, you talk about a witness problem. That's a witness problem. And so I think his relationship to is worse than an unbeliever in the area of the way he lives his life. I don't think it has anything to do about faith and all that, about being saved and that kind of thing. So think about that. Now, notice verse 9. We're getting into the widows again that are going to be on this roll. All right? No widow under the age of 60 should be put on this roll. Now, put on is an imperative, command. The word roll speaks of a register, of a almost like the early draft, put on a legal roll, a legal list. Now, does that mean they didn't take care of widows under 60? Can't mean that, can it? What if a widow under 60, husband died, left with children, no immediate family? Wouldn't the church help her? Certainly, certainly they would. But she would not be put on the roll, meaning she would not function as the official role of widows who had a specific place in the early church. We have this role mentioned by three of the early apostolic fathers. Ignatius, Polycarp, and Tertullian all mentioned this role as a early ministry body in the local church. And we're going to have a little bit later what some of their duties were. But they were women who went from house to house, taking care of the food for widows, and taking care of the sick and taking care of the needy. Matter of fact, in my own mind, the concept of deaconesses in chapter 3 and the concept of widows in chapter 5, if I could, and I don't have enough ground biblically, but in my mind, I make them the same group. But I can't exegetically do that. It's only in how they functioned and the early church mention of them that I kind of link those two groups together. Now, so they had to be over 60. Croak, we couldn't get ladies 60-year-olds to accept the flower on Mother's Day. Can you imagine the early church going around asking ages? Are you 60 for sure? Bingo, you know. So I don't know how they did it. Maybe they, I don't know. But anyway, they had the same problem, Bobby. She wouldn't come up here to get that flower for 2 years. And finally we got her up here by saying Vernon had a list and he was going to read it. And boy, we had so many women come up here that Mother's Day, they didn't have enough flowers for them. So I don't know how the early church handled it, but they did. Okay, they got to be above 60 and must a widow must have the husband of one the wife. I got so excited. A widow must have had but one husband. Now that's the same qualifications for the pastor, same qualifications for the deacon, and now the same qualifications for this widow role. Now what does that mean? Well, we've dealt with that before. Does that mean married only once? Does that mean faithful to the husband she was married to? Doesn't have anything to do about remarriage? I don't know. Context seems to imply not marrying again. But. The best early exegetical interpreter, which is Theodore of Mopsuestia, that's a place to be from, says this about this, and he was an early church father, very early, about a few hundred years. If she has lived in chastity with her husband, no matter whether she has had only one or a second, she can be on the widow roll. Now, I like the concept of family fidelity. And yet, I must say that because divorce and remarriage may give a handle for reproach, maybe there's a possibility of both interpretations. That we're talking about never remarrying or at least being faithful to the one man you're married to. The family relationship of Christian servants is very, very, very important, right? And so I have to just say, I do not understand exactly what it means. I wish I did. I'd be dogmatic. But since I'm not, I won't. Verse 10, must have a reputation for good deeds. And notice again down in verse 10, it says, devoting herself to any sort of good work. Friends, I want to tell you, good works is not something that those other denominations talk about. Man, we got hung up on good works. Now, good works will not get you to Jesus any day of the world, right? Good works are not the road that leads to Jesus. But good works and a lifestyle of faith are the only road that lead it away from Jesus. You can't meet Him and your life not be changed to care for others. Ephesians 2:10 is probably the best example where it says, you are created in Christ Jesus for good works. So good works are the natural result of a life-changing experience with the person of Jesus Christ. It goes on, bringing up children. They got to be over 60. Who's kids? Who's kids? The early church was inundated with orphans. The Greek and Roman societies, they would put children out on the dump heaps to die by exposure, especially girl children. And the people who would usually go around and pick up the girl children are the brothels, the prostitutes, the pimps, and raise those girls to be in that line of work. So the Christians would go around to those dump heaps and pick up those little babies and take them home, and the widow role would take care of those orphan children. Next, we talk about being hospitable to strangers. The early world was notorious for no place to stay. The inns in that day were notorious houses of ill repute. That was all you could find. And so it became mandatory for the Christians to allow their homes to become way stations for itinerant Christian workers and God's people on the move. So they must open their homes. Now that's asked of the pastor also. Notice where it says, washing the feet of God's people. Now, because this phrase comes in a list of phrases that are all to be taken literally, I don't think this is symbolic of humility. I think these ladies characterized themselves as literally washing the feet of the people that came to stay at their house. Now, since they didn't have carpet, it wasn't to keep the walks off the carpet. It was a sign of welcomeness. It was the cultural thing to do. As we shake somebody's hand and say, come in, they had the bowl and the towel and they washed their feet. So I think it is an act of the early church. And I think it's literal as it can be. Now, notice where it says, helping others in distress and then doing good deeds. Now, notice where it says, verse 11, keep the young widows off the roll for when they get... Listen to my translation. I winced at Vernon's and I really winced at mine. Listen to this about young widows. Verse 11, keep young widows off this roll, for when they get indulging their lower nature in opposition to Christ, they want to marry. My word, what a gross translation about marriage. That's saying, well, they just can't stand it. You know, they have to go get married, unspiritual. That's not it at all. Zero. Indulging the lower nature. This is not talking about that. The Greek word has the idea of being drawn naturally sexually. The sex drive is a wholesome, God-given, wonderful experience. It's not base, ugly, nasty. It's fantastic. And Paul is not saying, oh, well, poor old, just can't hang on, can you? You know, well, go on if you have to. Go get married. No, 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 no. Now, what is the in opposition to Christ mean? It was apparently an installation like the pastor and the deacons, where these ladies on this widow roll made some promises to the church about that they would serve the church and take care of their functions and that. And what Paul says, they're breaking their pledge to the church, so don't put them on the roll. Don't make them have that inner struggle. No, don't do that to him. Let him remarry, he's going to say. Now, you see where it says, in opposition to Christ, I want you to write down 2 Corinthians 11:2, where it talks about Christ being the husband of believers. And so it's referring to that. And so deserves censure. Verse 12, King James has damnation. If I was a widow and I read verse 12, it'd paralyze me. If you remarry, you have damnation. My soul, that's quite a kick for remarrying. In 1611, the English word damnation meant the strongest it could mean was censure. Strongest possible meaning was censure. Probably reproof was best. So King James is just it's a translation of the 16th century. Now, so they deserve censure, breaking their previous. Now, your translation probably has pledge, does it not? The Greek word there is pistis, faith. Breaking their faith. And so it's usually interpreted pledge, but exactly what it is. Notice verse 13. Besides, as they get in the habit of gadding from house to house and learn to be idle, and not only idle, but gossips and busybodies. Paul was such a tactful devil. Can't you just see the young lady squirming around in the pew? Oh, Paul, get off this, will you? Apparently, part of what these widows did, these ones that were over 60, is go from house to house. And some of you can see the inherent potential towards idleness that's involved there. And Paul, being a practical man, says, cool the tongue, ladies. And maybe say one more thing, a little bit more stronger vein. As being the husband of one wife, and as being over 60, and as being involved in good deeds, so equally does gossip cut someone off from the widow's role. Now, let's not jump down divorcees' throats. The same thing, if it does apply to divorcees, also counts to gossip. And boy, that just takes a whole bunch out. Whole bunch out. Gossip is nothing more than putting somebody on trial without them being present. It's evil. It's evil. Now, the word busybodies and taking things and talking of things they ought not to mention, from Acts 19:19, this word is used of evil magical arts. Both words have the connotation of some kind of magic involved. Could it be that these ladies, as they go from house to house, were so concerned with helping the sick that they might get involved in magical incantations to heal them? We don't know, but that seems to be the problem. Were they talking about these, you see the backgrounds, false teachers? Were they beginning to propagate the false doctrine from house to house? That what Paul's saying they're doing? Were they getting involved in the teachings of demons and all? Is that was the problem? It might very well be from this context, for you've got to hold Timothy up to the backdrop of this heresy that he was involved with. Now, notice where in verse 14 it says, "So I would that the younger women marry, have children, keep house." And notice the little phrase, "so as not to give their opponents any occasion for slander." Again, why? Why does the Christian leader have to guard his life so much so no one can have a handle to accuse or slander or criticize? Now, let the younger women remarry. Notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, we come with this whole thing again, and it even seems paradoxical in chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians, where in verse 8, Paul makes this statement. He says, "To unmarried people and to widows, I would say this, it would be a fine thing for them to remain single as I am." But notice chapter 7, verse 39, if you would please, where it says, "Now a wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. If her husband dies, she is free to remarry anyone she pleases, except he must be a Christian." Now the same thing Paul is saying in Timothy. If you can stay single, if you can serve the church, do it. Do it. If you have a desire to remarry, if you have a longing for companionship and children and the life at home, don't get on the widow's role. Remarry. Now, I think that's what he's saying. I don't see any great contradiction here. Paul is as practical as Paul can be. If you have the gift of celibacy or you want to dedicate your life like Anna, the rest of your life to serving God's people, fantastic. That's a great thing. But if you desire to remarry, remarry. With God's blessing, I think Paul would say. Now, notice here where it talks about verse 15. Well, see that little phrase, any occasion? That's the word that's used in Romans for beachhead. It's a place of operation for the evil one. So I think a good way to say no handle for accusation, okay? No ground for people attacking you. Now, notice verse 15. "For some widows have already turned aside to follow Satan." Oh, what does that mean? Well, it's got to refer back to verse 13. You know, verse 13, find that. Verse 13, I think that's what it's referring to. Notice verse 16. "If a Christian woman has widowed relatives..." Now, I don't know what to do with that. It seems to maybe be like if there's a Christian widow who has enough money to help her widowed relative, she needs to do it. That seems to be what it's talking about. Maybe somebody like Lydia. It would be inappropriate for a Christian widower to have all the widows in his family come live with him and support him. That wouldn't be too appropriate. So it says a widow who has means, let her take care of her widowed relatives. I think that's talking about that. But we really don't know. She should help them at the church be free from the burden so that it can help widows who are really dependent. The early church took care of its widows financially, and the ones it could, it put in official ministry capacity. Well, Baptist, if we are closest to the New Testament, why don't we do that for our widows? Yeah? Good question. I've got 5 minutes to take questions and comments. I will take no question from widows. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, Carol. That is a very, very poor manuscript variation. And it's so poor that we haven't been able to find it. So it was done because they couldn't see how this could fit, and the others seemed to fit better, so they put it in there, and it became a manuscript variation from that period. Yes. Yes, it was. The Greek world considered 60 the age where there was no real strong sexual drive anymore. Right. Which he would say would break their pledge and dishonor Christ. Right. Questions or comments? Yes, yeah. Ricky? Keeping the young windows off the road when they get indulging their lower natures in opposition to Christ. I personally understand marriage biblically in this sense. Marriage to me is the normal state of the Christian man and woman. Marriage is a godly state, a holy state, a normal state. In the Old Testament, anybody who wasn't married was a weirdo. That's just the way it was. Everybody was married. That's why I think Paul was probably married. Now, Paul speaks about, because of the problems inherent in his day in persecution, be better for people to remain single during these times of persecution. Okay? Now, even Paul, though, in the times of persecution, allowed people who have a strong sexual desire to remarry. Now, I talk to young people a lot, and I get people in my office that say, I'm 22 and no prospects, and I know the Lord doesn't have anybody for me, and I'm going to be, single all my life, and boy, God's meant. Wait a minute. 22, 21, there's a little time, right? I think if there is a normal, natural sex drive in a young person, it is just my particular theology that God is preparing someone for them, right? And that if someone does have the gift of celibacy, they will not desire to be married. The gift will become functional, and they will not desire, to put it with Paul, they will not burn with heat. So I think if someone wants to get married, you ought to fish in the right pond, find a Christian girl, a Christian man, pray for God's will, and I think you ought to marry. And I think I'm being just as practical as Paul. I think marriage is wholesome and good and holy. I think sex is a gift from God. And I just don't buy all this that it's evil and ugly and base. This indulging your lower nature just really irks me. I can't believe that guy translated it that way, That is a presupposition on this translator's part. And so does that help, Rick? Yes, David? Right. Here? Well,
Of course, it's the problem of culture more than the problem of anything else. My little girl, when she says, hun to me, I feel like slapping her off a chair. I don't want her to say, hun to me. I want her to say, sir. You know, I think that's important that she recognizes that all adults ought to be called sir and ma'am, you know. And that's important to me because she is a child and I'm an adult. Well, you just project that up. Someone that's 20 years older than me, you know, feels like that there ought to be a difference there. One reason why I call everybody I meet by their first name, I call everybody by their first name, is because I have to break down that as a spiritual leader. I have to. And I think Paul, all through Timothy, admonishes him to, you know, to be respectful, be loving, be kind, but you can't let them run over you just because they're older. So I think it's appropriate for a child and an adult. But when it comes to adults, then experiential knowledge is wonderful, and we thank God for old saints. If we would listen to old saints, we would say I have a lot of trouble. But old saints get senile. Do you know that? And old saints get stuck in the mud and the rut just like young saints do. And to say, well, I'm an old saint, you ought to listen, is baloney. Baloney. Just like you shouldn't listen to me because I'm the pastor automatically is the reason that just because you're 90 years old doesn't mean you have a better idea, right? We need to honor them because of what they've gone through and learn what we can from them. But I agree. Age is important, but it's not the priority important.